Boom, we're on. Today's guest, we've got Leon Edwards. How are you, brother?
I'm very well, brother. How are you?
Congratulations on your last fight.
It was good. It was a big fun, but yeah, thank you.
Nate Diaz, massive name in UFC. One of the biggest. He's been around for forever, basically, but great victory, which we'll touch on that. You're nine wins straight, is it?
Counting Bilal, I'll go 10, you know, but yeah.
Fuck it, as well, count 10.
Counting without 10 in a row, so it's a... It's a great position to be in, you know, in one of the hardest division in the sport, the welterweight division. So to rack up 9 wins, he said something, you know. I think in the history of the promotion, it's Usman, George St. Pierre, and me for the longest win streak in the UFC, you know, in the division. So I'm definitely proud of myself, you know.
And you should be.
Thank you.
It's phenomenal. Honestly, I take my hat off to you. I watched the fight. I'm a big fan of Nate Diaz as well.
Yeah.
But obviously, you've got to support the local lad, innit? Well, not local, I'm from fucking Glasgow. But I always go back to the start of my guest, brother.
Yeah.
Where you grew up, how it all began.
For me, I was born in Jamaica, in Kingston, Jamaica. Most of my childhood was based in Jamaica, you know. Came to the UK when I was like 13 years old. Less than that, probably about 10 years old. Went to school here, grew up here in Birmingham, like I said, and it was a wild childhood. Lost my dad when I was 13 years old. It's many different chapters to my life, you know, so it all just depends, how I want to be told.
What was school like in Jamaica?
From what I remember, it was good, you know, like any normal school. Obviously, the environment that I was in Jamaica was poverty, you know, you can call it poverty. I was brought up in a wooden house with a zinc roof, you know, and my dad was the leader of a gang in the area where I lived, and that's how it all started from that, and just coming from there to where I am now is, like I said, it's an amazing journey, and like I said, I'm proud of myself and what I've achieved, you know.
Should be proud. This is only the beginning for what's to come as well.
Yeah.
So seeing you staying in like wooden huts and stuff, was that just the norm? Was there any electricity or anything?
Yeah, for sure. Basically, one wooden shack thing. In that wooden shack with your bedroom, your living room, you know, done. Everything is in that one shack, you know. But like I said, I was more well off than all the other kids because what my dad did and what he was involved in, you know. And he came to the UK first, and I think he was still doing what he was doing, selling drugs, getting into gang shit. And from there, he was like using his money, I guess, now growing older, using his money to send back to the gangs in Jamaica for drugs, arms, what they was doing, you know. And from there, like I said, I came to the UK. I think it brought me, my mum, and my brother to the UK for a better life, you know, to give us a better opportunity at life.
Did he see that there was not much opportunities in Jamaica to then try and give you a better life here?
Yeah, 100%. I believe that was his thinking, you know. I never ever got the chance to sit down and talk to him and see what's the reason he did it. But now, me being a dad, I guess that was his reason. He realised it was a dangerous environment to have his kids in. And the UK was a better opportunity for you to get a better life for yourself and for your family. And that's what he did. And you also have to respect that, you know, to be a man and to... came to the UK, not forget about his family back in Jamaica and still think about them and brought them to the UK for a better life. Yeah, you have to respect that, you know.
Yeah. Did you know the gang culture then that your dad was involved in at a young age, or were you oblivious to it?
Nah, I knew exactly who he was, you know, in the area. Because everyone knew who he was, you know. So as a kid, it's like... Is that cool? But it's like, your dad is the main man in the area. It's like, you got more privilege than other kids, you know, in the shit you can do and can't do, and what you get for gifts and shit. And I was getting like remote control cars and bikes, and in where I'm from, it's like weird, you know, to get that as a kid. And I was getting all that, I had like a PS1 and everything, you know. So, like I said, he made a sacrifice. He did what he needed to do with the opportunities that he had, and he did the best he could, you know.
So when you come here at 13, how did your dad still end up active from Jamaica to Was it Birmingham?
London. Yeah, Croydon.
So how did they end up active then?
What do you mean?
Just from like still gang culture.
Yeah. It was still involved.
Was it involved with Yardies?
Yeah. He was still involved with the gang culture and with doing what he was doing, and didn't end up getting murdered. Like I said, when I was 13 years old, and then from there, it was like you have to be like the man of the house, and I was like, time to grow up. You can't. He's no longer a kid no more, you know. And so like I said, I understand the sacrifices they made, you know. I've also been involved in similar situations, and I kind of understand his thinking, you know. So
how does that play effect on you now, the death of your father? We'll go back to when you were 13. How does that play effect on you? Did you, because I interview a lot of criminals, as you know, like the majority go down the same route, prisons, addictions. You've not. You've used that as fire, as fuel to then basically become a leader yourself, but in a positive role.
At 13, I'll say from like 13 to about 19, I went down the same path, you know, involved in criminal activities in gangs and getting into trouble on a regular basis, you know. So I think MMA, you can say, saved my life. I got involved in MMA at the age of 17. When there was a local gym building in my area, in Erdington, in Birmingham, and one day I was walking past my mum on the high street, and there was a gym building above the Blockbusters, and she thought, I should give this a go, you know. But I know the reason why she was saying it is to keep me away from my friends, you know. I'll do it. Cause I was always good at fighting, you know, and I was like, okay, cool, I'll give it a go, and I literally fell in love with it, you know. I think MMA was like the father figure that was missing, you know, the discipline, the hard work, and what you learn through MMA, not just the fighting, you know. And I think that's what attracted me more to it, the positive reinforcements I was getting from the coaches, from the teammates, saying, "Oh, you're good, you can do this, you can, if you put your mind to it, you can achieve it." You know, you never had that growing up. I never had that growing up. You know, it's always just about, I wouldn't say it's negative, it was more just about surviving, a surviving mentality, you know. And to have now people reinforcing your confidence and say, look, you're good, if you stick to it, you can achieve something.
Did you start believing in that?
Yeah, I did. I think over the time, the more I trained, the more I competed, my confidence grows, obviously, and the more success I had, the more my confidence grows, you know.
How hard is it going from what you went through, losing your dad, to then being involved in the gangs yourself, to then cutting away and then focusing on you? Was that difficult at the start?
Well, difficult at the start because it's difficult to, like, if you grew up knowing one thing and then suddenly you're just doing something totally opposite. Yeah. It's like, it was difficult at the start, you know, but like I said, the positive reinforcements kept me in the gym, you know, kept me turning up to the gym, showing up, even though I was getting my ass kicked because I was new to the gym. It still kept me there, you know, and I'll go from the morning to the night. I was BD all day. I train in the morning. I chill all day in the gym. Then I train again on the evening, you know, and that's what I was doing from the age of like 18 to now, you know. And I think I credit it to the positive reinforcements I was getting from the gym to keep me in the gym.
Who gave you those positive reinforcements?
Just my coaches.
What was their names?
Mark, I think he was one of the owners of the gym. People like Vaughn Lee at the time. Silk, there's a few people at the time that was reinforcing this in my brain, you know.
Confidence, belief
in yourself, and just a different way of life, you know. This is not the only way there is to achieve greatness in life. And I think growing up, that's all I thought. I want to be a gangster like my dad, and all. This is the way to get respect. This is the way to do it. It's not, you know. And the more I dive into MMA, the more I dive into like the mental part of it, my world open up, you know. The more I travel, I've been to I lost count how many countries I've been to because of MMA, you know, and meeting different people, and your brain just open up, and the more your brain open up, you just can't so relate. No, I can't relate as much no more as I could as a kid to like the street, you know.
Because you've got sons at 10?
Eight years old,
Can you see the like, with your dad trying to get you away from the gang culture, then for you being what you are now, future world champion, your son at that, it's a vulnerable age between 8, 16, starting to learn everything, but you've got that role model, you've got that, role model attitude with your son is going to kind of look up to you. But you looked up to your dad when you thought violence would have...
Was the way, you know.
It was a way to try and make him proud, even though he was dead.
Even it's a weird... Like, looking back now, it's a weird way of thinking, you know. But when like I said, at a young age, from 8 years old onwards, it's like, I couldn't imagine my son going through what I went through as a kid, you know. Like I said, I was in a war zone when I was a kid, you know. It became the norm, and it's weird that I was able to normalize like shootings and stabbings and killings, and I was just like a normal day in the life. And when I was a kid, you know, which is looking back now, it's crazy, you know. Look, it's mad.
How much difference is the gang culture from Jamaica, London, Birmingham? Because Birmingham's rife just now, but what's the difference between UK gang culture and Jamaica? Do you think it's just the same?
Worse in Jamaica. Yeah, way worse in Jamaica. Way worse. They're way more violent, you know.
Nothing to lose.
Way more violent. No cameras. The police is like same as the gangs, you know. It's way worse, you know. Obviously, UK is still bad, but there's different levels to different to obviously in African life. And I think as far as murders go, I think Jamaica is way worse for it, yeah.
What about your first fight? What was your first fight like? From a boy from the streets who think they can fight to then get into an MMA gym, you know, it's a different ball game.
I actually done good in my first fight, my amateur fight. I actually did good, you know. I think I stopped the kid and knocked him out in like two rounds or something, you know. But I was training for like a year before that. But before that, my gym had like an interclub, which is like different gyms meet up and basically have a fight. And I won that tournament. That gave me more confidence in myself and more belief that I might have something here, you know. I might be able to do something in my life here. And then from there, I went to my first amateur, like I said, and I got a victory. So I think every time I want to work harder, because I know, like, look, there's something there. You can actually do something. If you dedicate yourself and work hard, you actually could, you know. And I was more realizing that the more I compared,
the more hard work you put in, the more belief kept growing.
Yeah.
What about when the UFC came calling? When was that, 2015?
Yeah, I think about 23 years old, I think. 22, 23 years old, you know. I was already the Bama, at the time, I was a Bama champion.
World champion, huh?
For Bama. And my manager called me to the gym one day and what do you think about Brazil? I was like, what about Brazil? She's like, what do you think about fighting in Brazil? I was like, that would be good. UFC just called, said they want you to fight in Brazil in like three or four weeks. I was like, started crying and shit. I was like, perfect, you know, because like, this is like everything you worked towards as a kid. And to come from where I come from to now to be able to be in the UFC, it was like a dream come true, you know.
Yeah, there's not many people done that so far, especially from the UK, especially with your record now. Like, you are the man
in
the UFC for the UK. It's absolute flying. Your division, I believe, is the strongest.
Yeah.
There's so many great fighters, but for your division, man, it's unbelievable. You lost, was it the first two fights?
I lost my first fight in UFC.
How was that feeling?
Horrible, you know.
What was
that? I hate losing, and this is why I work so hard and train so hard, you know, because I hate the feeling of losing. But I think now I've turned it all into lessons, and now I understand why I lost, and I study why I lost, and I try to get better, you know, and that's what I do. And I've like I said, now in a 10-fight win streak, and every time I lost, I always come out better, you know. Even though it hurts, but I think sometimes it's needed, you know.
Yeah, it's painful.
Yeah.
So then you went on, you won two, and then did you lose to Usman?
Yeah, that's it. I lost the first one, 1-2, then lost to Usman.
And that's the last time you'd lost?
Last time I lost, 5-6 years ago.
And that went to distance as well?
We went to distance.
So there's a lot of...
In his hometown as well, you know.
Yeah,
so.
Get it, I never.
In his hometown, but it's all good. Like I said, it's always a lesson. And I think at the time as well, when I fought Usman, in the UK, there's a weird thing where it's like, you get to like a level, then like, oh, you need to go to America to improve.
Succeed, yeah.
You know, you can't do it from Birmingham. There's no one there to train with, blah, 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 you know. And as a kid, you start believing this, you know, because the older guys are telling you this, you need to go to America, you need to do this. And I started believing it, went to AKA from a camp for Usman. But my old camp was all to do with defense, like don't get taken down. And all defensive, and I was going there with like a defensive mind state, and I went into the fight. That's where I fought it with a defensive mind state. I weren't thinking about what I need to do. It's more just about what he's gonna do, and don't let him do it, basically. You know, and that's not a good way to look at life. All fine. You know, if you should go out there, do your thing, and let him adapt to you. That's where I look at life as well. And I've came back to the UK. Came back with my team that I was winning with. I was winning with my team. Came back with my team. Fixed what needed to be fixed, and now here I am. 10 fights.
Back to basics.
You know.
Does that still sting? Has defeat?
Yeah, for sure. Every day, you know, and I think that's what drives me. You know, that's what motivates me to keep winning. And I just hate the feeling of losing. You know, I think I put so much into it. It always reminds me like I'm going back to where I started. Like every loss I take, it's always like, oh, I'm going back to Jamaica. It's like I put it in my head like. I make it bigger than what it is in my head, you know, and I think that's why I work so hard and dedicate myself so hard.
So one of the longest winning streaks in welterweight history.
Yeah.
So how do you end up losing the first two and four fights and thinking, was there ever a stage that you were going through and you thought, fuck this, like, maybe I'm not as good as I think, or did you use the negativity and the losses as tools to then kick on and be on a great winning streak?
I used it all to motivate me, and I used my upbringing, my everything to motivate me to be better, you know, and that's just mentality. I always think is way worse than I couldn't be doing, you know, like you're getting paid to do what you love doing. You enjoy doing it. Why now like shy away from it, you know? And for that's just a way I look at it, really. Just every loss I take is always just about learning from it and growing from it. Obviously it's hard at the time when you're going through it, but you come to like of end of it. It's a great thing, you know.
Yeah, especially growing up in the tough streets of Jamaica. So if you have a loss, you're probably thinking it's fuck all compared to what people have to go through where you grew up.
Yeah,
the killings, the murders, the robberies. So it's basically, I'm fighting in the UFC, I'm making some money,
yeah, exactly.
I'm making my family proud, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Which is a
good
thing.
It still hurts, though, the last one. It still hurts, but yeah. If you put it in that sense, then... Mm-hmm.
It's not as big as...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You know, I get to do this. I enjoy doing it, you know, and there's many people that's been chasing the same dream that I'm doing, and why waste the opportunity, you know? And that's what I look at, like, now I work so hard to get here. Why waste it, you know? Why not dedicate yourself to it? Why not train hard, you know? And that's what I never understand athletes, that they work all the childhood to get to, like, a point in the career, and they're sort of, like, slacking off and... partying and drinking, and like, what's the point? Why work so hard just to get here then throw it all away?
Yeah,
and that's just where I look at it, you know.
Gotta go for it all,
yeah.
Gotta go for it all.
I'm one of these personalities, either all or nothing, you know.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I want it all, and I'm gonna have it all, you know.
Did you believe you deserved to be in the UFC at the start, or was there a certain match or certain fight you realized, okay, I'm here and I deserve to be here?
I always believed that I would get there, you know, even though people tell me when I was young, oh, you're the 7 billion people on the planet. Possibility of getting to the USA. I've heard that time and time again, you know, like,
naysayers.
You need to get like a plan B, get like a job, and I was like, nah, I never job in my life, you know. I always, I have no money, you know, but I always dedicate myself to this one thing. I thought, I don't need no plan B, you know. I truly believe that I would have made it, and now here I am, you know. So yeah, all the naysayers.
Because you beat the superstars of the game, like Cerrone and that as well. How was that? Because you were young with 26, 20, like we got against.
When I first fought Donald Cerrone, this was my biggest fight at the time, you know. Mm-hmm. My first headline, I think, in the UFC. It was in Singapore as well, halfway across the world. So it was a surreal moment, you know. But I was at the time, I couldn't put it in my head as a surreal moment. It's more just about there's one person in front of me to stopping me from achieving my dream, and that's all. I look at it the same way for all fighters, you know. It's just you and me, and all the hype around you, all the media, everything. It doesn't matter. It's about me and you, and that's just the way I look at it. I don't think you can put like, oh, this great guy has been around for a long time, and it will affect your fighting, you know. It'll affect the way you think of him, and I'll see him as a normal person and go out and compete.
How do you go into a fight?
How'd I go into it?
Yeah, how did you plan it? And before that, just before you're just about to start, because you seem quite a humble guy, other fighters that try and push buttons and kind of rail people up. That looks like it consumes energy, but you're very calm. Is that your game plan?
Yeah, just stay calm, stay relaxed. And I think, like I said, once you believe in yourself,
Let the fighting do the talking.
Let the fighting do the talking, you know. Like, I truly believe I am number one in the world, you know. I've been saying it for a long time, and I know when I was younger, people were like, nah, you're not, blah, blah, blah. You won't make it to the top 10 in the UFC. And, you know, I've heard all this my whole career, you know, but if I really believe I'm number one. I truly believe it, and I keep proving time and time again. And I know they don't want to keep down to me and not don't want to give me the respect of it, but what more can I do? You know, I'm long as I go out there and win, that's all I can do, and that's all I'm focusing on. Go out there, compete, win, and let the world decide, you know.
Yeah, you're bang on course, though.
Yeah,
you're one,
sure.
Two fights away from being world champion. Like, Nate Diaz, one of the biggest in the game. You probably get Conor McGregor, you get Khabib, and then you probably get Nate. Like, massive. He's been nearly 20 years. Like, he's massive name. When you get a name like that to come forward, even though, did you know there wouldn't have been a title shot after that, or was that?
Not at the time, I didn't, because I fought Bilal Muhammad in March.
Yeah.
So I was like sitting around the house, and my manager phoned me like 3 weeks after. He was like, the UFC just called. Do you want to fight Nate Diaz in May? But this was the first fight, and I was like, Nate. He's like, yeah. I was like, okay, perfect. Let's get it done. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't sure, because Nate is one of these guys where he'd be like, yeah, I'll fight you, then you won't hear from him again for like another year, you know? So once the contract was signed, I was like, okay, perfect. Let's go. We got to fight in May. Then I think he got injured. I think I heard through the grapevines he got cut or something. So we had to like reschedule the fight for a month after, which is June, you know? And it was a, like I said, it was a looking back, it was a great fight, you know? Great fight week. He's tough as fuck, you know. And
he's a tough man.
Yeah, he's tough, man. He's known to, that's their thing, you know. They're known to be durable, they're known to be tough, and fair play to him, you know.
Because you won every round, fourth round. We've got to touch on the fifth round when he's clipped you.
Yeah.
And he's wobbled you, man. That's the first time you've been proper wobbled.
Proper wobbled.
What's that feeling?
All I was thinking is don't shoot, you know, because when it did it to Connor, it attacked Connor, and Connor kind of like panicked and shot for the takedown, you know, and ended up getting choked out. That's when he beat Conor McGregor the first time, you know, and that's all the things from here, just don't shoot for the takedowns, and I'll just kind of ride it out. And I think I showed my chin in that fight. I didn't touch a canvas. I was still smart. I was still aware of what to do and what not to do, you know, and so it was a good shot, you know, give it to him.
How does it... Like, coming up against him, he looks as if he takes some punishment, but he still always comes forward.
Always, yeah. Well,
what
is
that mentality?
I don't know. It says it's Mexican mentality, you know? So, I don't know. He's just a tough, durable
guy.
He's
just a fucking nutcase, isn't
he? It's fucking madness, you know? Yeah. And he smokes weed and shit, so I don't understand where his cardio come from.
And he's not vegan or something?
And he's vegan, you know? So
crazy bastard.
I don't know. I don't know. Him and his brother does it, you know? But, like I said, his game I respect since that fight, and... Fair play to him.
No disrespect to him, massive name, but do you feel as if that wasn't really a step forward because his long layoff, 2019 or something? Like,
I think
if you were always going to beat him in my eyes.
Yeah, I think let's say he fought like a month before, I don't think Nate beats me, you know. I just think technically I'm just way better than him, you know. For the technical aspects of the fight goes, and I think fight 10 out of 10 times, I win 10 out of 10 times, and I believe I'm a better fighter. He's the biggest name, but I don't think he's the most skilled opponent I've fought, you know.
Yeah, but for a business side, like, beating guys like that just gets your name global.
All his names are perfect. I want all his names. And like I said, he's a huge name in the sport. You put him up there with, like, him, Conor, like I said before, Khabib, Masvidal probably. All these guys, man.
There was a mutual respect there between both of you. Wasn't really many.
Nah, it was cool, man. It was cool. I thought it'd be more like...
Heated.
Yeah, like heated. And well, he didn't say not much fight week, you know. He's a chill guy and just smoked his weed and chilled, you know. I was like, cool.
How frustrating is it? Because I know you've had 4 or 5 cancellations.
Because
if not, you could probably sit in here world champion just now.
Yeah, for sure.
How's that when you're ready for a fight and people are pulling out?
I went for like a mad frustrating year and a half, you know. I went from leaving 2019, having a great year in 2019. To 2020 being like, I was like, this is my year, when we were world champion, that everything scheduled in to when I'm going to fight, when I'm going to fight for the belt, everything, you know. And I was headlining O2 with Tyron Woodley on the Sunday before the fight, the corona hit. It was like, called the fight off. I was like, fuck, it's like sold out in like 2 minutes. And it was like one of my homecoming, and I was looking forward to like going out there and performing. Because the year before that, when Darren Till was headlining, I was like, I want to do it, you know. And then corona hit, and it's like, since that, it's been like, all the way downhill. I got matched up like three or four times. With Hamzat, I got pulled out twice, I think, two, three times. And it was a wild year, you know. I was like sitting on the sidelines when you're fit, healthy, young, and just can't compete, you know.
How'd this happen? Is that because after the Woodley fight, there's not been a world title fight after that? You were close to a world title fight?
Yeah, for me, yeah. After Woodley fight, I would have got a guaranteed world title shot next, you know. So to go from that to like now, still one fight away, but to go from that to, you have to like restart your journey again and get back active again after a year and a half. It's a long time off in anyone that's a professional athlete career, you know, in football, anything. But I kind of use that time. At the start, it was like frustrating and annoying, but I use that time to just do refix my brain and just think, you know what, instead of like sitting around and bitching in the morning and moping about, use the time to get better, use the time to improve yourself, use the time to get better skilled physically and mentally. And that's what I did, you know. And I've proved that since coming back competing, I've improved leaps and bounds, you know. And so yeah, I think that the looking back now, the time was a blessing to have off, you know, because rare that an athlete going into his prime get like a solid year and a half off just to train, just to concentrate on training and improving and getting better, you know. And as before, when you're in training camp, you're not really improving. You're kind of training for one person, you know. You're mimicking the game for this one guy. But when you're free to train and do what you want, you can learn stuff and see what works for you, what don't work for you, and go from there, you know.
Yeah, how was it fighting without any fans in March? Was it March you were fighting without fans?
March in Vegas. Mm-hmm. It was good. I enjoyed it. I said it after the fight. I was like, I liked that. I was like sparring. You know, you could hear everything clear. I could hear his corner telling him what to do. So I was like, yeah. You know, it was perfect. And yeah. I was like, oh, this is sick.
That was another fight though. First round,
yeah,
you smoked him all over him, and then was it the second round? Did it get stopped?
Yeah, eye poke, mate. I've
never seen that.
Yeah.
I've never seen that.
Neither. Normally, you can dead eye poke and just like have a little time off, then come back to fight. You know, but this guy started crying and like fucking.
Could you have got disqualified at any point for that?
I don't believe if it was purposely. If I'm like doing this, then yeah, you know. But I weren't. I was throwing a combination. And you stepped in. And I never like eyeballs like dead and like lid. You know.
So how does that not get called as a victory if it's a punch, basically?
I think you have to go past two rounds, I think.
Or does it?
I think, yeah, like a certain time in the fight before they can like go to the scorecards, you know. But
even though it's like a knockdown, because he had to stop, so that you don't get the victory, how is that?
I claim it as a victory, to be honest with you. But
no, you keep saying 10.
I claim it, but I don't know. Gave me the DQ, you know. I was happy they didn't put it down as a loss. My first loss in my career was the same. When I poked, it was like a knee. The guy was coming off the takedown, and I threw the knee. I thought his knee was off the floor, and he started like rolling around, and it gave me a loss for that, you know. It was like, it's not a loss. It worst case scenario, it's a DQ, you know. So that was my first loss in my career, you know.
So where do you go now? You get Miles Dove.
My plan is to fight for the title, you know. I spoke to the UFC.
Is it Masvidal?
Masvidal Usman is the world champion right now. Masvidal, obviously, from what happened in London and all backstory, if you know, that's a fight the fans want to see, you know. So either way, the cookie crumble. Either go straight for the title shot, then fight Masvidal after, or Masvidal first, Usman after. I don't think it matters. I think either way is
if you beat Diaz, Masvidal,
then title shot, it's perfect.
And that's fucking next level stuff.
Perfect,
that puts you in pound for pound one of the best then.
Yeah, for sure, 100%. But he just keep making excuses and running and saying he doesn't want to fight me, you know, so we'll see.
Why?
I don't know. Everyone wants it. I want it. The UFC wants it.
It's been out. Fuck,
let's go, you know. I'm ready to go whenever he is.
Because
you know?
Dana White was speaking about it yesterday.
Yeah, I seen it. Yeah. I seen it. They want it, you know. I want it. But like I said, you cannot force a man into a fight. You know, if he doesn't want to fight, you have to see him.
They've lost a lot of fights as well, Masvidal. Like, he went through a spell there where everybody loved him. He just looked great, and then the kind of fires went out a bit as well.
Do you know
what I mean?
But yeah,
everybody wants to see the fight with yourself and Usman. It's... That's the life-changing fight for yourself, isn't it? That's the game time, win the world title, everything you've worked for, and then you sit with a belt, man, you're thinking...
It'd be fucking amazing, you know, to have that and just for me and my team, you know, just to have it for the kids that's coming under me as well. Just to see, like, look, you can achieve it coming from where I come from and the background I come from, and just like giving them motivation, you know. I think of we've all read about I'm already a success in my life, you know. I am financially well off, my family's happy, my son is healthy, and obviously I'm gonna win the bout. I really believe I'm gonna win the bout, but I do not put my happiness in the bout, if you know what I mean, you know. But it's gonna happen either way.
Yeah, of course, because that's not where you're going to find your completion or
your
all fulfillment. Like, see, when you're going through your fights and stuff as well, is your dad still at the back of your head?
Yeah. I always wonder, like, what would you say, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I always like, ask my mom, like, what do you think he would be like? Because, you know, it was he was like a very, like, strict man, you know? He was like, so I always wonder, like, what would it be like? And what would you say if you realize what I'm doing and what I'm achieving in my life, you know? Because it's a mad thing, you know.
Yeah, it's sad that, because I've lost family members to murder, and I lost my dad, but not to murder. It was leukemia. And like, the things that I'm doing, like traveling all over and meeting interesting people, that like, I would love for my dad to even be here today. We all went for food with everybody, just to be sitting there, cracking his shite jokes. Just that's the hard part, because because sometimes you question, like, I only interview people, but I question it, like, why the fuck do I do it?
Yeah,
but I do it because I kind of want to. I strive to be better than I know I can be. My dad always knew I had greatness in us. I never believed him when he was here.
But
as soon as I go, that's when I start believing. It took me about 5 years after it, because I went down a road of drinking, drugs and violence. And then when you start achieving, you think, fuck me, man. Like, even when you won the world title, part of you
wish they were there, mate.
Yeah, and it's hard, like, beating Nate Diaz. You're thinking, even though you've got your team, you still wish...
You
see them and do you know what I mean? And that's the hard part. Is that what gives you fuel and fire to keep going, to keep as if you're still trying to make your dad proud?
Yeah, exactly. I use that as motivation, and I use that to make him proud of me, you know, to make him the way he was for me. He was a great dad, you know, he's a great provider for the family, he's a great human being, you know. But I use that, like I said, to be just like him and look after my whole family and just try to make him proud, you know.
Is that where you get the dedication from?
I believe so. I'm a mom, you know.
She must be proud.
Yeah, she's very proud, you know.
Proud, man.
She had two sons that my brother does it as well, you know, Fabian. Mm-hmm. He fights for Bellator.
How old is he?
He's 28, probably, 27, 28.
How much is that competition for both of you when you were young?
When he was young, it was like back and forth, you know. Yeah. But like I said, I'm proud of him, you know, for what he's achieving. And he always copied what I did, you know. When I was on the street, he kind of like went down the same path as me. And when I came to MMA, he got involved in MMA, you know. So I'm very happy now to be a positive role model in his life, you know.
That's a good thing, because I've had brothers on, Mikey, who does the fighting and stuff.
Yeah.
His brothers would have followed him anywhere he went as well, but he went down the life of crime.
Yeah.
And they followed him, obviously went into MMA later in life. And that's the difficult thing, is to be a role model for the right reasons. Like, if you went to a prison, no doubt your brother would have went, because he would have tried to keep the family name or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
You're fighting for nothing, basically. You're fighting over postcodes that people who don't give a fuck about you anyway.
You don't fucking own a house in the postcode, you know. But when you're young, it's like, it's all in your brain, you know. You think it's a easy way to make money, your friends are loving it, your girls are loving it. You kind of just like fall into this trap where you think this is it, you know, this little area that you live in.
Yeah.
That's the world, you know, and it's not, you know. But since traveling, like I said, I think that's helped me, like, open up my mind, you know, my brain into different stuff and different way of living and how different people think, you know. But at the time when I was young, I truly believe that this is all it was. This life was all it was, this little area, this postcode, this gangs and drugs, and this was life, you know. But
and that's the scary thing about life, like, people are stuck in a loop where they think it is normal. That, like, go back to the Jamaican days, that, like, there's so much potential there, so much potential in Birmingham, Glasgow, London, Liverpool, and they just go down certain routes where they never ever find their true potential. And I think they say, like, the richest place on the planet is the graveyard, because people are going with books that they never wrote, or songs that they never sang, or fights that I never thought of. There's just so much potential everybody has, whether that's whatever it is, it's to find your potential. So when you started finding it, now you're feeling good, going for world titles, people will be looking up to you going, if he can do it, I can do it. And that's what it's all about. So there's not many UK fighters in the UFC.
Big Paul Craig
as well from Scotland, who's flying just now. Dan Tull yourself, would you ever go up a division and fight Dan, or do you think he could ever come down, Battle of Britain kind of thing?
We was going for it back in the day. We was both like going back and forth back in the day too. Cause I was saying, one time we was both welterweights and I was both the same weight class, and but it never materialized. And the US was like, we wanted to happen, but let's like grow the profile a bit bigger and then make it happen in the UK, you know. But you end up moving up world, middleweight.
So he's still a megastar. He's a funny bastard. He knows how to promote a fight.
He is. He's a good lad, man. Since he's moved up, I've kind of like been sport to him now. Yeah, he's all right, man. He's a good guy, you know.
Do you see everybody in your weight class as an enemy?
Not enemy, just a person that's blocking me from achieving my dreams, you know, and that's it. Once the fight, I'm fine. Now we can be friends, you know. But before that, it's like I have to go through you to get to feed my family, you know. Mm-hmm. That's how I look at it, you know. And it's no personal. It's all business. It's all good.
How was Joe Rogan podcast? How was that? That was a massive platform, number one in the world. How was that feeling?
It was wild, man. I was in Vegas. Manager phoned me saying, Joe wants to do on his podcast, but he moved to Texas, right? Mm-hmm. So he said, come to Austin, Texas, and come to my show. Him and Dave Chappelle was doing a show the night before, not before the podcast. I was like, oh, sick, Dave Chappelle.
That's class, man.
I was like, oh, shit.
Greatest comedian of all time.
Mate, mad. I was like, oh, yeah, sick, Dave Chappelle. So I went went to the comedy show, the great comedy show. Then I was like, he messaged me saying, come backstage. Dave wants to meet you. So I went backstage. This is like a mad night, bro. I went backstage and they were like, oh, shit. You're a kung fu guy. I was like, yeah. But I grew up watching Dave Chappelle, you know, like in the black community. In the wild anyway, but especially in the black community, like Dave Chappelle was like, legend. Yeah, he's a legend, you know. And it was a wild night. We ended up just partying all night and then had the podcast in the morning, you know. But like I said, to do stuff like this, like Joe Rogan, meet Dave Chappelle, and to go back and tell the guys where I grew up, or the guys, the kids in the gym, what I've done, this is all just motivation for them, you know, to like, look what he's doing. Like, I want to do that as well, you know, even better. I want to be better than him, you know, and this is what I want, you know. So it's a mad life and a mad 360 life, you know.
Does that feel so real? Like, because of the guests, like, even speaking to yourself, I watch you fighting in the UFC, UFC fan, and then it doesn't feel like, it becomes work, but it doesn't seem real.
Yeah,
like,
it's mad.
You can feel a little fucking bubble.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm just scared in case someone pops the bubble. No, it's like, and you're thinking, bro, back up in Glasgow and I'm doing fuck all that.
I'm the same. That's what works so hard, you know? It's like so surreal moment. Even that night, it was going to after party. It was like me in the car. Joe Rogan's driving the car. Dave Chappelle in the front seat. I'm behind Dave Chappelle. My manager. I was like, what the fuck? He's like, how much Dave Chappelle and Joe Rogan driving to like after party right now, you know? It was like a surreal moment, you know?
Were they two puffing like fuck?
Yeah. Were they?
Because I think it's legal there anyway.
Yeah, it's legal.
Yeah, they love their weed, man. Were they stoned out their box?
Yeah, the good lads though, man. It's all humble, you know? You think they'll be like big-headed, but they're not. They're all like good lads, you know? I think that's what I've taken away from them. Like, look, you can still be a good person. I met guys before that, like, the celebrities and just like dickheads, you know, like the rude and the thing that they're big, you know. But like, especially with Dave anyway, he was like humble as fuck, you know.
He's a fucking global superstar.
Yeah, I know, it's mad.
Rogan is massive as well.
Joe, you know.
So you're sitting in the back seat thinking, what the fuck?
Yeah, I said to the manager, what the fuck? Like, he's driving a Tesla. He's like driving, Joe's driving his Tesla. Chappelle in the front seat and shit. I was like, mate, this is a mad night. It's a random night, you know.
Was it cracking jokes, Chappelle, or was it just...
cracking jokes in the car and just like, it's like a normal guy, you know. I was like, fuck, that's mad. That's sick.
How was that? Because what time was the podcast at? 1?
About 1 o'clock. And I got in about, let's say about 4 or 5 o'clock.
You fucked?
Like, I was fucked. I was like, oh shit, I got to do the podcast in the morning. Uh-huh. So I got to Joe Rogan. I was like having like fucking Red Bulls and coffees and just trying to stay up, you know. But it was a good podcast.
Yeah, that's a great fucking thing, man. Like, That's next level. That's bigger than TV.
Yeah, 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 for sure. He's like one of the biggest podcasts in the world.
Oh, he is the biggest.
Even his fucking studio. His studio is fucking amazing, you know. He's got like a new one. I thought it was the one that he had before. We can like a gym in there and shit. I was like, oh, let's train. He's like, oh, no, I love my other studio, you know. But yeah, even his studio is like...
Because he can scrap. Yeah, he can scrap as well, can't he?
Yeah, he's good. He's like, we were showing him like sidekicks and shit and... Should I, could he did taekwondo, I think he did for years, and he's a good guy, man.
What does your friends and that say? Is there any, does that you got any jealousy towards what you're doing?
No, not from my friends anyway. I get it from like random people, but not from my friends, you know. But this is the thing, all my friends now are doing great things, you know. They all got like businesses and stuff that they're doing, you know. So when I started doing MMA, I think that kind of like helped my friends, they want to do great as well, you know. So they started like, someone got like a care company. One got like a care company for like old people. One got like a building company that would do like kitchens and bathrooms and other stuff, you know. So all my friends are all succeeding in their own way and in what they're doing, you know.
Yeah, a strong network is important for having good company and people who believe in you instead of the naysayers. Like, can you imagine surrounded by somebody every day telling you you can't do something?
Nah, mate, I had it when I was young, especially when you're young. That's like when you're young and you have like an older guy telling you like, look, there's like 7 billion people on the planet and everyone chasing this one dream. The possibility of you achieving it is low. This is what told me, you know. I was like, I thought, it's gonna work, you know. Like, I really believe that it's gonna work in my heart, you know. And I just worked towards it and blocked everything out, just worked towards, kept just show up at the gym and do put everything I could control. I did it, you know, and that was it.
Does your mum watch your face?
Yeah.
Did she watch them?
She watched the last one, you know.
What did she say?
Oh, mate, she's
a Jamaican woman. Yeah, she's Jamaican. She's
that prattle like Jamaican, you know. She was watching it. So when I got rocked by Diaz, when I came back, I was like, "Mom, what did you do? Like, what happened?" When she's like, "I opened the window, I started screaming, 'Help!'" I was like, "Mom, you got it." So I started screaming, "Help! Help!" Blah blah blah. Like, my heart was in my throat and stuff, you know. But you gotta imagine, so. It'd be crazy watching his son fight, you know. He'd be mad.
Yeah.
Like, I got a kid now that's like 8 years old and he does jiu-jitsu and kickboxing, you know, and I couldn't imagine him fighting, you know.
Does he watch your fights as well? Mm. How does that then, to ingrain that, to be a winner, to be potential future UFC world champion, like, for such a young age? Because you're a late starter as well.
Yep.
17, 18,
yeah.
Like, it's late.
Yeah, very late for martial arts.
Yeah,
very
for
late,
people starting at 11, 12.
Yeah, yeah. For example, football. Let's just start football at 18 years old and now you're in your prime. It doesn't work. It don't work, you know? Yeah. So I put it down to, like, it was my hard work, my natural gift and God, you know? And I'm a high believer in God and a path, you know? So, yeah, I think for my son, he's proud of me, you know. He tells me all the time, and like all his teachers know me and everything, and he's always telling me like what the kids say in his school, and so yeah, that's what makes me proud and makes me work hard, you know.
That's the thing that we spoke about. You don't want the bubble to burst, because once it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah.
Can you enjoy the journey though, for what you've achieved, what you're coming through? Because everything seems to go fast, doesn't it? Yeah, seeing you're doing well and you're meeting amazing people. You don't seem to take it, and it's when you go home, you're lying in your bed, you're like, fuck, what just happened there?
Yeah, it's mad, yeah. Same as like Joe Rogan experience, the same thing, you know, like, because you're in the moment, you're not really thinking, oh, it's Joe Rogan, Dave Chappelle. When you get back to your house, you're telling your friends, they're like, no, you didn't, Dave Chappelle. I was like, bro, look at the picture, like, I was with him in the car and that. But they don't believe me, you know, but it's a mad life, and like I said, I work hard and put a lot of time into it to make it work, and... to achieve my dreams, and I think as long as you put the work in, your bubble should keep growing, you know.
Yeah, because you're a good guy. You do a lot of knife crime stuff in Birmingham as well.
Yeah,
let's touch on that.
So I've been involved in knife crime, gang crimes, and stuff like that from a young age, and I've lost many friends to being either stabbed or shot from doing it, and from being a victim of it. You know, I've seen both sides of the coins, and even just last year, I've lost one of my friends from getting stabbed on Father's Day in his neck, you know, and bled out on the street. And I've started a charity, me, Darren Till, Jimmy Manuel, about knife crimes, about helping the youth that's involved in gangs to get better, you know. So Jimmy came to me one day and he mentioned it to me. So, what do you think about doing like a charity? I was like, perfect. I was thinking about it. I just didn't know how to do it, you know. And He's like, oh, it's all a good idea to get Darren involved as well. I know he'd been stabbed before, I think. Darren.
Yeah, he was, yeah. Nearly died.
Yeah, yeah, I heard. And he's like, okay, let's talk. So we spoke to Darren and he's like, yeah, perfect. I want to be involved as well. And they were sort of like brainstorming like how to do it. Then we got the UFC on board, spoke to the UFC about it. They was on board straight away. And now, yeah, it's basically done now. They'll be funding it. So the aim of the charity is to partner up with the police as well, and a charity called Legacy. They've got a few different locations around the UK, one in London, one in Liverpool, and there's one in Birmingham, you know, and we're basically mentoring the kids and just like talking to them, training them. If they show potential, they will pay for their membership from any gym that they want to go to, like a martial art gym they want to go to for a year, which is like a scholarship basically. And yeah, that's the aim, really, just trying to give back, you know, and trying to, the kids that grew up, we grew up, show them a different way of a different life.
Yeah,
you know?
That's an amazing thing, mate. Like, that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Like, even though you won titles, your son's proud, your mum's proud, like, trying to give back is where you find a bit of balance and you find, okay, I'm really doing, Darren Till's, like I say, he's a fucking legend, funny bastard. I'm good friends with Darren now. Like,
yeah, he's a good legend.
He's just a funny bastard. Like, he's got the watches out, he's got his fingers in every pie. He's just a kid from Liverpool doing his thing.
Doing his thing. Just, you know, you have to respect it, you know. I know like people hate on him and just haters and stuff, but you have to respect it, you know. From anybody that works hard to get to where they want to get to and achieve it, you know. I never hate on it, you know. I always respect it, and I think that's, for me anyway, that's what motivates me, is the giving back part of it, you know. Because when I was younger, it's all about me. I want to be like, I want to be rich, I want to do this, I want to do this, you know. But when you get to like a point, you got like money and but you're traveling by yourself, you're doing shit by yourself, it's not as fun, you know. It's better when you can like give back and help people. That's where I find my happiness now, you know.
But that's the hardest thing to do, is to try and do something legit. Like, anybody can rob a bank, anybody can do bad stuff, anybody can stab anybody. But the hard thing is to actually change your life, make your mum proud, your son proud, by doing the right things. That's the hard part. That ain't easy.
Nah.
That's why not everybody can do it.
Exactly.
So that man who's talking about 7 billion, you're lucky if 1,000 people, you're 1 in 1,000 chance of doing it if you stay focused.
Yeah, exactly. Like, exactly.
7 billion, that's weak people. How many times do you sit in a pub and somebody says they could be a contender, they could be a footballer?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But they're sitting in their only 30s and 40s. Well, if you know your mistakes, why not do something new and focus on that?
Exactly.
Like, your life's not over.
Exactly.
There's always something to give.
Exactly.
There's always something to give.
Exactly. But it's always, like I said, in your life, you know, I've naysayers that I think, like I said, I believe in God. I believe that God put him there to test you, you know, he put him there to see if you really want it. You know what I mean? Do you truly believe what you're saying? I think that's why these guys come in your life, to try to derail you from your path, you know. And I just use that as whatever, you know. I don't you, just because you think that way doesn't mean it's gonna happen to me, you know. And I've always been that way, been my own man, you know.
That's how it's best to do things yourself, because if you tell someone your dreams and ambitions, they've not got the same focus or vision, so they speak you out of it.
Eventually, they can't see it. They can't see what you're what you're saying. So you're telling them, oh, listen, I'm gonna open a business, but they're gonna tell you all the negative reason why you can't open a business. So saying, oh yeah, if you try this and do this and to help you with it, which is it's the way the world is, you know. I think that's why you gotta be solid mentally and stay focused on what you want to do, put a plan towards it and just achieve it.
Everything's about risk.
That's it.
Somebody's got to be world champion.
That's
somebody's
it.
Got to be the biggest podcast on the planet. Somebody has to be.
Why not me? Why not you? You know,
we're on path.
Why not?
Fuck them all, mate. Fuck them all.
Why not, man? It's gonna happen, you know. And like I said, I can tell from the way you work that you're serious about your thing, and so am I, you know. And why can't we be, let's say, for example, next Joe Rogan and next world champion? It would happen, you know.
Exactly, man. Why not? You've got to believe. Like, I just want a bit of freedom. I want to be happy, but able to travel as well and meet great people. And do you know what? I'm actually doing that. But I don't feel as if I'm there yet because I've become greedy to it. Want bigger and more.
Yeah. Which is good, though. It's a good mentality to have, you know, that wanting more. And even though you achieve so far great stuff, you always gonna want more, you know, which is good. But you can't let it be your main. You can't put your happiness into it, you know. Like, I don't put my happiness into the belt, you know. But I'm gonna achieve the belt. I know I'm gonna achieve the belt
to get some happiness as well. An extra sprinkle of happiness.
But I'm gonna get it, you know. But I don't, like, if I don't get it, I won't be like devastated. You know, I will get it, you know.
With that division, the welterweight division, solid.
Yeah.
The money fight, Conor McGregor, there's a chance that he would ever come up or you go down for that big money fight as well?
Possibility, there's a possibility to it, you know. I feel like I'm just I'll be too big for him though, you know. I'm like a natural welterweight. I don't think Conor's fought like a natural welterweight, you know. Every time he's fought a welterweight, he's either been a lightweight going up or he's never been like a welterweight, you know. So, yeah, there's a possibility. There's a possibility, you know.
So that's a mega fight.
Yeah.
That's the next, that's the biggest fight you could have in the UFC.
For that star power go.
Because he believes that he can win 3 belts. If whether he wins another belt at the division he's in now, because he's called out Usman as well.
Usman, yeah. I think...
Like, if you get that belt and he calls you out, man...
Yeah. We've got the same manager as well.
We've
got the same management team, so that'll be easy to get made, you know. But, yeah, I don't think that'd be wise, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not for now.
Everybody always mentions him in the UFC. What do you think his fight, next fight coming up? Do you think he'll win?
If he made the right adjustments, it depends, you know. He's made like over 100 million and it's difficult to know. Give me 100 million. I'm dead, you know. So,
I've fucking seen you eating cakes just now. He was eating cakes today.
So, let's see his motivation, you know. Uh-huh. Let's see his motivation. I want him to win for sure. You know, I think I like people that do great stuff, you know. He has done great stuff. He won 2 bouts in the UFC. He's made hundreds of millions coming from Dublin, so I'd like to see him win.
Fucking,
you know?
Amazing what he's done, man. He is a superstar.
I know people like talk shit about him and say that he's cocky,
jealousy. Everybody would want what he's doing.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? That's what we're all working towards.
Exactly.
He's done it. He's the guy done it in the space of 5-6 years. Obviously, grafted behind the scenes, but to then create whiskey businesses, clothing brands, fucking, he's got gym stuff, food. Like, I respect that massively. He's a massive name.
I think it should beat Dustin, you know, if he's focused. If it comes in like lots of days, then I think Dustin beats him. But when he's focused, he's good, you know.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. Yeah. Listen, people forget that he was 2-weight world champion, the first time in the UFC.
Exactly,
that.
You know what I mean?
But then you could see the mobility, you could see the way he was moving. Yeah, he looked
different
next
person.
Level.
Yeah, he did.
Then when the money comes in, taking a year out, 2 years out, like how hard can it be when you've got a son and a daughter now? You've got your son, like, to get to a certain level, say you made a few million. Then
but listen, give anyone 100 million in the bank, it's going to be hard to fucking get the same
person. I'll be back on the gear, mate. Hookers everywhere, mate. I would have been podcast right out in the air. Fuck everybody, mate. Like,
it would be difficult to be the same person, you know. So.
Start looking down on everybody. All the shit that we're talking, fuck everybody.
Yeah, it's madness. That's like people like Mayweather, people like that, spent like hundreds of millions, 800 million in his career, and he's still focused, never drinks a day in his life.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's a weird, man. Different people, you know, so fair play to him.
But
man,
anybody can get there.
You can.
Anybody can get. Whether I don't visualize to be that wealthy, though I believe it could mentally fuck you up, man. Like, but I don't know, man. Do you ever worry that your fire could go out?
Far as like
fighting wise and hunger.
Eventually it's going to, like it's like anyone, you know, eventually you're going to get to an age where you won't be able to compete, you know, and, In any sport, fight sport is a short career, you know. So I think it's good now to make the right investments and the right connections now, you know. So when you do retire from the sport, I'm still be well off, you know.
How many years do you think you're going to give up?
I'm 29 now, so
5 years.
5. Nah, 35. That's my prime, bro.
You'll never retire, mate.
That's probably like late 30s. Late 30s.
You're gonna go 38, 39. I think though the people who go older find it more difficult to quit.
To quit, yeah.
But if you won the world title at 29, 30,
yeah, true.
Then you've got to do your defences, but would you struggle to quit?
I don't believe so.
It's such a weird question at such a young age.
I don't really think that far ahead. If I was like quitting, but I know there's gonna come a time where. When I can't do it no more, I'm too old, my body's not the same, I'm not reacting the same, and I won't hang around to get, like, knocked out by young guys, you know? So there will come a time, that's why I'm making the right choices now in my life and doing the right things now, so I can walk away comfortably, you know? Because I think the reason why people stay around sport or fight game is because either they blow all the money when it's young party and then enjoying life, and then I got older. Oh shit, I need money, you know, to carry on my life, and they want to stay in longer, you know. So I think as long as I make the right decisions now, I'll be able to
make good investments,
not quit, but like retire.
But there's great money in UFC now. It's not like back 5 years ago, 10 years ago.
No.
You look at some of the greats who fought then, they were fighting for buttons.
Yeah,
to be fair, I believe the UFC fighters are still underpaid.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely. And I think that probably will change. I know a lot of people have been speaking out lately that I think John Jones and that's wanting mega money for the fight, but and rightly so, man. He's the
fucking... so you should, you know. I think you're putting life at risk. You should get paid for it, you know. Mm-hmm. I think with the UFC, because it's a new sport as well, it's like been like 25, 30 years old. So I think it's still kind of like figuring out how I was done, you know. I think when the NBA first started, NFL in America, it was the same kind of thing. The guys was lower paid and they had like a blackout and they had to like change the structure of the paycheck, you know. I think like it has to be like over 51% go to the athletes, you know. And I think in the UFC is opposite, you know. It's different, so we'll see.
Yeah, because it's usually the guys that are putting your life on the line.
Life in line for it, you know.
You're still getting paid for them. You're still working for a corporation like you say, still trying to figure it out. But I think if enough people come forward and speak, then they will start making it, because it's a fucking $1 billion company. Do you know what I mean?
It's another day for like four billion, I think four to six billion. So
it's all right, sweet money there.
Bastards, there's definitely fucking money there, you know. But I think eventually, I don't think in my lifetime it will change drastically, but it will change. But eventually, I think it'd be. Mm-hmm. It's a growing sport. It's one of the most popular sports in the world right now, and it would definitely change.
What about who would you have loved to fight? I know you want Usman for the belt, but is there any fighter you've ever watched?
GSP, you know, like for welterweights, he's like the.
He's a legend, isn't
he? Yeah, he's like a legend.
Do you think he'll ever fight again, though?
He beat Michael Bisping. Mm-hmm. He came back like a couple of years ago and beat Bisping, you know. So, I don't think not in the UFC if he does anyway. I think it's probably like. Try that YouTube boxing out everyone's doing.
Yeah, it's involved. Throw a couple of $100,000 now we all fight any kind.
YouTube boxing, so that's how does that annoy you,
like a fighter, a true fighter, trained all their life, and then a couple of kids coming in from YouTube and making more money?
It doesn't bother me one bit. Like I said, I don't watch another man pocket, you know, like fair play to them. If they want to come in and they can get money to box, it doesn't bother me. I don't know why people hate on people that do good, you know. I don't care. You do your thing and I'll do my thing, you know.
Yeah, see, I'm the same. I see it as opportunities.
Yeah, but I think it's bringing more eyes as well to boxing, I think, you know. Mm-hmm. I think boxing's kind of dying out a little bit.
But I think people are now starting to say it's becoming a laughing stock, because there's so many of these fights now and it's been getting boring. Like, I want to see Joshua and Fury fight out, like the big fights. It's difficult. I just don't feel as if they get made as fast as the UFC. You've got one belt. The best fight, the best.
I think that's what's killing boxing, you know. The one division is like six different belts. Mm-hmm. So you don't know who the champion is. You don't know. It's difficult to understand, you know, which is UFC. Like I said, it's only one belt. So you know exactly who the champion is. You know the route, the ranking system. So you know who should go next. And so it's a. I think it's a new sport, but it's all the kids now that I know is going into MMA. You know, like back in the day when I was young, all the kids are going to like boxing, football, and different stuff. You know, so I think for MMA, the next like 20, 30 years, it's gonna be a huge sport. Yeah. You know,
where do you go from here, brother? What's the plans for the future? Obviously, world title fight, hopefully this year, starting next year. But what's the plans? Where do you go? Is it just?
Right now, as far as my goals, my career-wise, my plan is to be world champion by end of this year, early next year, you know. By March, I'll be world champion. And then from there, I want to be going on one of the greatest of all time to ever do it, you know. And just that's my goal. I'll just focus, goal at a time. For the first goal is to be world champion. Then I'll go from there and recalculate and see what's next, you know. And like I said, make the right investments, my money, and just enjoy life with my family and my friends.
Do you ever rest?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Can you rest though? You seem like the kind of guy who's constantly wanting to train.
No, I train even like now. I'm meant to be having like time off, but I'm still like I train once a day. You know, I enjoy it. Like, if I don't train, I feel horrible. My body feels shit. My mentality feel like like shit. You know, so I enjoy like even like running. Just go for a run. It has to be like a hard session. Just go for like a jog and hit a bit of pads, a bit of bag work. Just nothing heavy, but I like to sweat. I like to do something, you know, and just work towards my goal every day. And I think if you want to be great, you have to work towards it every day. You know, you can't just think, you know what, 1 week I'm going to party, 1 week I'm going to train. You never achieve it, you know, and just work towards it day by day, one goal at a time, and look around in 10 years' time, you fucking... you achieve greatness, you know. Yeah.
See, because you've been through so much trauma as well, did you ever go and speak to anybody, like a counsellor, a therapist?
Never, and I should. I fucking need to. But I have it, you know. Because even some of the shit I've told, like my like exes and like my it's different. Like, you know, they can't get it. You know, like, I mean, it was normal. Like, I've seen like people been shot and all that. You know,
it's fucked up. See, I've never seen anybody. Yeah, yeah. I've lost countless family members and friends to murder. It just feels fucking. Like when you have a discussion with my friends, it seems normal, but the more I'm speaking to people and interviewing people, I'm starting to think, maybe I'm a little fucked up.
Yeah. Nah, for real. But, I'm the same way, you know, like some shit is like, like girls always tell me, like, you got no emotions, you know, because it's like, I just don't see what they see as emotional. Mm-hmm. Emotional is not, you know, but. Yeah, it is a different problem to somebody.
I can watch people fight like fuck. I've seen a lot of bad shit in my life.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you become cold towards it, but then I can listen to a song on the radio and start crying.
Can you?
And I think, what the fuck?
What the fuck's happening? Yeah, I ain't got that kind of emotions in me.
Yeah, but would you ever go and see somebody? But do you think that could maybe, I wouldn't say changes a fighter, but then maybe lose that? You've kind of got like a barrier up where you're just solid, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You break it all down, you might get into the ring, just want to start cuddling someone.
Balance. <Yeah. laughs> I got a balance. Yeah, I know thought about it. I know thought about it. If it's keep doing me, you know, it doesn't affect my personal life. It doesn't affect me in my career. So, I don't thought about it, to be honest.
Yeah. I think. You're on a great path anyway. You're doing the right things. Yeah. You're very humble, very well spoken. You're just doing you. Yeah. You're leaving a legacy for not just yourself, but for your son and other people to look up to you and go, I'm going to do that. If you can do it, anybody can do it. And what that does is leaves a blueprint. Yeah. You've got Bisping in that world title. Dan Tulls, yourself. Got to give Big Paul Craig from Scotland. I hope he gets maybe a title shot next year. He's flying as well. Like, there's people there. Like, even though violence doesn't solve anything, but it's the training. The exercise to balance the mindset to then feeling good and then get into a normal. Like, all the gangsters I speak to, every fucking one, you probably only get two or three we get into a ring and fight somebody.
The rest just
all talk shit. They just all use weapons and talk shit. I'll edit that bit out, know what I mean? I don't want my fucking. But they do, they talk shit. But why? Because they're weak. They're scared. People always ask me the question, do you ever get scared? I say no, because what I see is weakness.
Yeah.
A person who owns a gun or a knife is a weak man. They're so broken within.
They
don't want to feel pain anymore. So they'll hold a weapon to try and protect themselves. But anybody that gets into a boxing ring, any sort of fucking martial arts or whatever it is, any combat sport, they're tough bastards. I used to train in a gym in Glasgow called the Grip House. Looking at the people who fought there, you would never think anything of it, but they would fucking tear you apart because they were so nice and humble. It's like all my friends,
which is mad, you know, because I got guys in the gym the same way, but on the street they're like bosses, you know, that like you're a good fighter. Why are you so scared of confrontation outside the gym? You know, which is, it's like a weird thing.
Why is that?
I don't know. I always wonder, like, it's weird, you know, like some guys are sick fighters in the gym, but on the street, like a guy can come and like bully them, and I was like, mate, you can batter him, like, what are you doing, you know? I don't know what it is, like a weird mentality, you know. It's
because they're so good, but they're so humble. They don't need to prove anything.
To prove it,
it's the ones who want to fight and shout, and I see weakness.
The loud ones, you know.
The loudest is the weakest.
Nah, for real, I believe that as well, you know. But I think, like, for me, I think my upbringing helped me with my fighting career, you know. If I was like, the no fit aspect of it and seeing a man as a man, you know, I don't really build him up to be something that he's not, you know. I've been in many situations where I have to rely on myself, you know, and I think that's what helped me in my fight career, where you have to rely on yourself and believe in yourself that you are who you say you are. Cause it's nothing to figure it out if you ain't.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you really deep down your heart, you're not who you say you are, it's gonna get figured out, you know. And like I said, I've been in situations where I've proven to myself that I am who I said I am, you know, and this is why I got my belief, and this is why I work so hard, and where reason why I'm at where I'm at, you know, because I truly believe it, you know.
Do you enjoy getting hit?
Nah, I don't know. No one enjoy getting hit.
There's some people I've spoke to, and Dan Tull loves that, he says. Yeah. He loves it. The bastard, he says. I've seen him on fights when he's telling them it hit him. You've got to be psychotic, I believe, to want to fight.
A little bit.
Even though you're sitting here, nice, nice guy.
I don't mind it.
To go into a ring and be willing, listen, it's life or death.
Yeah.
Do you have to switch off that your mum's watching, your son's watching?
All that's gone, you know.
And what do you see when you see the guy? Kill? Mentality, like, I'm going to fuck you up.
Yeah, that's it. I just see my future, you know. I think I have to get through a year. I don't see him as a person, you know. I see him as like a better life, basically, you know.
That is a fucked up mentality,
you know. I don't see you as like a being, you know. I just see you as legs, arms, and body, you know. That's it.
Another step towards your goal.
That's it. That's all I see as, you know.
For anybody watching, brother, that's maybe thinking of going down a life of crime, or maybe that's in a life of crime, and it's they've still got a chance to get out, what advice would you have for them?
If you've got a chance to get out, then you should. You know, there's more to life than the streets. You know, I've lived it, I've seen it, and I was brought up in it. You know, the end to it is either see a prison or death. You know, if you're really doing it, if you're really involved in it, see a prison or death. No, I can't name. There's that many millionaires off the streets, you know, from where I'm from anyway. There's that many that's going to retire the millionaire and like back in the day and the all gangster movies. That's not how it works. You're going to go to prison either. I got friends that's doing like 30 years, you know, he's just 21 the other day and he's like 35 years in prison. 35 years, 21 years old. Like, mate, it's a different life, you know, It's not what you think it is, and all your friends that you think that are gangsters, they're not. You know, when the pressure comes, and people start snitching and snaking you, and you go to prison, and your friend is having sex with your girlfriend, and it's a snake world, you know. And why would you want that? Why would you want to make your family proud and your mom proud and provide? That's a real gangster to me now. A guy that can fucking buy his mom a car and provide for his family and do what he wants to do, you know. So that's. If you want to be a gangster, that's the gangster you should be, you know. They can go take your family on holiday and whenever you want, and a one that works hard and a man with principles and morals, you know, and that's it.
Yeah, that's a badass mentality, is to do something in your life and try and help out the people who's helped you when you had fuck all. That can be the difficult thing. Yeah.
The real people that help you, like your family, not no friends that you think are your friends. Mm. Some of them ain't your friends, you know. I've been in a situation where I seen my friend snake my friend, you know. I was like, mate, I thought you were friends.
There's no loyalty in that game.
No loyalty at all. It's a difficult thing. You know?
Because obviously you've got a great story.
Yeah.
World title this year, next year.
Yeah.
And you get potential book deals, documentaries, films. Like,
I also documentary, you know? I always want to do it, man. Yeah. I'm trying to find like a camera crew now. I can like go back to Jamaica, show like Jamaica. My dad was buried in Jamaica as well, so I'd love to like go back to his grave and everything.
Get that sorted. You know? So I believe it will happen now, speaking to you.
Yeah.
But you know, everything's to do with vision, law of attraction, belief. You already told me you already believed you're number one.
Yeah.
That's all. You've already completed that. So when you eventually do win, it will feel normal. It'll feel fucking normal.
And it does, you know. Yeah. Like, even that now when I'm just winning, it just feels... After it's finished, it's like...
Do you feel underrated? Do you feel as if you're not getting the credit you deserve? Especially going on a 9-1 streak. You say 10-win, but let's go for 10. But
fuck it, 10.
But to go for a 10-win streak, do you feel as if you're not getting appreciated enough?
Yeah, for sure. For what I'm achieving, I don't think I'm getting the hype that I should, you know, from what I'm doing and what I'm achieving. Coming from where I come from, not many people from UK, especially from Birmingham anyway, in the UK, that's doing what I'm doing, you know, and to be the number one fighter now in the UK, I'm ranked number two in the world, and achieving what I'm achieving, I therefore feel underrated. But like I said, I do not care, you know. Like I said, if I believe that I'm going to achieve it, my aim is just to provide for my family, achieve greatness, and do my thing. When it's all said and done, I'm not gonna look back when I'm 70 and be like, oh, you know what, I wish they fucking liked me. I won't, you know. I'll be like, look, my mom's retired, my son is nice and paid for, and I'm living good, you know. That's all that matters to me, and that's why I look towards, you know.
That's the best way, because that's all outside noise anyway.
Yeah,
as an elephant, sometimes it's good to fly under the radar as well, because then when you eventually do become king of the fucking the world, then Everybody think it's all kiss ass, it's all fake.
Yeah, it's all
and you,
fake.
You can get sucked right into it. Where,
and it's easy as well to get sucked right in. You know,
all the limelight.
All the girls, and if all the girls like you. If you call the girls like you, but they don't like you, they like you for who you are, you know?
Yeah. See, he's an object.
I've seen men that's like, they lose their life to the fame and the hype, you know? But
that's all bullshit. That's the fake end, but you've got your head screwed on.
Sure. I think once you dedicate yourself, that will all come as well. Don't chase it though, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not waking up every day chasing hype and all this, you know, just do my thing. And that will all come. If I control what I can control, everything else will come, you know, and that's what I believe and that's what has been working out for my life. So keep doing it.
How does it feel to be number one in the UK?
It feels good, you know. Coming from a guy that told me that it's 7 billion people in the world. Yeah. What's the possibility of you getting to the UFC?
What a miserable bastard he is, man.
I can't remember his name. Yeah. I would have fucking said his name.
Fucking miserable cunt.
I can't fucking remember his name, mate. But to come from that to now number one in the UK and number two in the world is what a journey, you know. What a story and what a life. And from Jamaica to now USA, it's a fucking
great story, man. Great, like that life, is a great know? Story. Like that is potential films, that is potential documentaries, facts. Books. Like to becoming where you came from, especially losing your dad, and then fighting the streets of Birmingham, London, to then changing your life to being world champion. Like that's like a Rocky fucking film kind of thing, innit?
It's like I'm proud of myself, you know. Like belt or not, I'm a fucking winner in life, you know. I've turned it around, you know, and I could have went down the same path. I could have been dead all 7 life in prison, you know. Even like the other day, I spoke to one of my father's best, like his right hand man, you know, and he's doing life now in prison. He's been in this since I was 14 years old. He's been in prison, you know, and I spoke to him the other day because I ain't spoke to him for like 10 years, and for some reason, for my mum, because him and my they're always like close because I'm young and I was born to like talking about my dad and stuff. And when you're 13 years old, you ain't got really like a clue who your dad is. You kind of know, but you don't know. You know what I mean?
It's
so
it's like a dream.
Yeah, so I'm like, asking him questions about my dad and shit, which is like weird. Now, I'm a big man now, you know, but you still like want to know. And you just say, "Now, you'd be proud of you." And keep doing what you're doing, you know, and that gave me even more motivation to want to do more, you know.
Yeah, that's what you need. Everything's about timing. You probably didn't want to ask those questions back then. Like now you're becoming, you've succeeded.
Yeah.
You've become the man that you knew you could be. You've become the man that your dad probably knew you could be. Mm-hmm. Now your dad was involved in life culture, but it doesn't mean you're a bad person. Mm-hmm. My uncles were involved in bad things, but I loved them to death.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I don't believe in wars, but my granddad fought in World War II. Like, I still fucking loved him. Like, he's obviously seen potential. Now, if your dad could have stayed in a gang culture in Jamaica, but you wouldn't be where you are now.
No.
You could have been dead and your dad could have still been alive.
Exactly. But imagine if he left us in Jamaica, you know, let's like, when he came to the UK, he got remarried, you know, he got married to a woman in London and still brought him from Jamaica to the UK, you know. Most men that I know, they'll fucking get remarried and forget about like his kids in Jamaica and his ex-wife, you know, in Jamaica. Cause I got a new missus and new kids in London, you know. So I'm saying his morals and the way he thinks is what I think, you know.
My family man,
you know, no matter what, it's about your family, about your kids. And
that's the best thing, brother. But I'm telling you what, mate, you're going to be world champion. I'm fucking buzzing for it. So yeah,
it's going to happen.
Because your next fight, when you get, we'll go.
Yeah,
Abdullah.
Yeah,
we'll go, my brother.
And next interview as well, the battle will be right.
Yeah, fucking right there, mate.
You know,
and that cunt who says about the 7 billion, mate, he's getting a picture right up here, right, negative bastard, mate. But would you like to finish up on anything, brother?
Just thank you for the interview. To all my sponsors.
Who's your sponsors?
I've got Mantrix, got Junus CBD, got a management company as well called Kings. I've also started managing like athletes from my gym and from other gyms and around the UK, like young kids, giving them opportunities and showing them the lessons that I learned from the game, you know. And I've got a great team behind me that's helping me with that, and it's a positive thing, you know. I'm going in the right direction.
Yeah, mate, future world champion, you're already, believe it. But for coming on today, brother, and telling your story, listen, I'm genuinely backing you.
Thank you. Can't wait
to see you win that belt.
Good man, God, I appreciate it, brother. Thank you.
You can also watch my podcast on my YouTube channel. The link is in the bio if you'd like to subscribe. You can follow me on my social media platforms to see who my next guest is. Follow me on Facebook at JamesEnglish11, Twitter JamesEnglish0, Instagram JamesEnglish2. You can also download these podcasts on iTunes or Spotify.